ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 5, text 18 to text 21, chapter entitled Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness. Vidya Vinaya Sampanne Brahmane Gavi Hastini Shuni Chaiva Shvapake Cha Pandita Samadarshina. Vidya Vinaya Sampanne Brahmane Gavi Hastini Shuni Chaiva Shvapake Cha Pandita Samadarshina. Vidya Vinaya Sampanne Brahmane Gavi Hastini Shuni Chaiva Shvapake Cha Pandita Samadarshina. Matajis, Vidya Vinaya Sampanne Brahmane Gavi Hastini Shuni Chaiva Shvapake Cha Pandita Samadarshina. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The Lord as Paramatma is present both in the outcast and in the Brahmana, although the body of a Brahmana and that of an outcast are not the same. The bodies are material production of different modes of material nature. But the soul and the super soul within the body are of the same spiritual quality. The similarity in the quality of the soul and the super soul, however, does not make them equal in quantity, for the individual soul is present only in that particular body, whereas the Paramatma is present in each and every body. A Krishna conscious person has full knowledge of this, and therefore he is truly learned and has equal vision. The similar characteristics of the soul and super soul are that they are both conscious, eternal and blissful. But the difference is that the individual soul is conscious within the limited jurisdiction of the body, whereas the super soul is conscious of all bodies. The super soul is present in all bodies without distinction. I'll just read the translation of the text 19, 20 and 21. Text 19. Iheva tejita sargo yesham samye sitammana nirdosham hi samam brahma tasmad brahmani te sita. Translation. Those whose minds are established in sameness and equanimity have already conquered the conditions of birth and death. They are flawless like Brahman, and thus they are already situated in Brahman. Text 20. Na prahurushyet priyam prapya, na dvijet prapya cha priyam, stira buddhir asammudo brahmavid brahmani sita. Translation. A person who neither rejoices upon achieving something pleasant, nor lament upon obtaining something unpleasant, who is self-intelligent, who is unbewildered, and who knows the science of God, is already situated in transcendence. Text 21. Bahyas parseshu asattatma vindati atmani yat sukham sa brahma yoga yuktatma sukham akshayam ashnute. Translation. Such a liberated person is not attracted to the material sense pleasure, but is always entranced, enjoying the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized person enjoys unlimited happiness, for he concentrates on the Supreme. Hare Krishna. So, text 18. Vidya Vinaya Sampanne Brahmane Gavi Hastini Chuni Chaivaishvapakecha Pandita Samadarshina. Translation: the humble sages, by the virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned, a gentle brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater. Seek the blessings of all the Vaishnavas. Not qualified to speak on such a high and elevated topic. The theme of today's verse is the symptoms of self-realized soul. It is said that it takes one to know one. A person has to be on that caliber to know what is the symptom of a self-realized soul. Of course, for a conditioned soul like me, it's completely beyond my reach and capacity. So I beg your blessing so that I can speak something for my purification. One time, the Prime Minister of India, Pandit Jawaharlal Nehru, he happened to visit a mental asylum. And when he went there, he saw somebody giving lecture. And after the lecture got over, everybody was clapping. And people who were listening to that lecture garlanded that lecturer. And he was confused, what's happening? He went ahead and saw a person who was counting stars in the sky. Much more bewildered, he went ahead and saw a person who was running a bike with his hand, moving here and there. So he got completely confused and realized these people are really crazy. He met a person who welcomed him. And this person, after welcoming him, asked, "May I know who are you?" He asked the Prime Minister. And Prime Minister said, "You don't know. I am Pandit Jawaharlal Nehru, the Prime Minister of India." So this person who heard it, he said, "Arre, ek aur aa gaya." And he said that all these people you see, the person who was lecturing and the person who was listening, when they all came here to this mental asylum for the first time, when they were asked, they replied the same thing, that they were Prime Minister of India. So you are a welcome addition. Please welcome to our mental asylum. So, this is a wonderful, I don't know whether it's true or but it's a story. We can learn many things from it. So, when a person thinks what he is not, then we call him mad or crazy or lunatic. If I claim myself sitting here to be Prime Minister of India, naturally everybody amongst you will think, who the crazy guy is sitting here? Similarly, when we think what we are not, that means what we are mad. Here everybody in this assembly, they were thinking they are somebody or other, but actually they were not. So that's why they were fitted to be in mental asylum. Similarly, here in this world, we also claim ourselves to be what we are not. Somebody claims, oh, he's this body. Somebody claims, oh, he's this mind. Somebody claims, oh, I am God. Somebody claims, I am this, I am that. But the actual identity, as explained by Bhagavad Gita, is that we are not this body, we are not this mind, we are nobody, but we are spirit souls. So when we claim what we are not, then we also come under the category of lunatic or mad people. So only that person
who knows his true identity is a sane man. Otherwise, everybody here in this world is insane. And here this verse exactly speaks about that. We spoke about Pandit Jawaharlal Nehru. But who is real Pandita? Pandita Samadarshina. The first symptom of a self-realized soul is that he does not get illusioned by thinking himself to be this body. But he knows completely for reality who he is. He is a spirit soul, part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. So only this wise man explained here in Bhagavad Gita is true sane person. Because he knows who he is. Rest of this world, people in this world, they think, what not? What they are not? So they are, we think we are somebody or other. I am a doctor, I am a physician, I am an engineer, I am this, I am a dad. But we forget who we are. So, we are fit to be called crazy or mad. And just as the crazy people in that mental asylum, he took Jawaharlal Nehru to be crazy. But for reality, in one sense, relatively, he was the Prime Minister of India. But they thought that, no, he is one amongst us. So we also sometimes take great souls to be one amongst like us and think they are also crazy. In fact, they are crazy. Here is a symptom given that a pandita or a wise man, he sees everybody with an equal vision. Now, I may say that I don't see everybody with equal vision. Most of you don't see everybody with equal vision. So maybe this person, maybe he is an illusion. He is the only one. He thinks something else. Everybody here in the class, we don't see everybody with the equal vision. Only he is the one. So maybe he is an illusion. We are actually sane people. But that's not the reality. The reality we learn through scriptures. The scripture says that only a person who sees, who knows who he is and who sees other with equal vision, actually that is the person who is having real vision. Krishna speaks about vision, drishti. Rest of us, our vision is actually covered. We can't see what our real identity is. And this person, he is in real sense actually seeing the reality. Rest of us, actually, we just see the externals. But this person actually goes deeper and sees the soul and the super soul within. So one who has developed this vision, he can see everybody. Not on the platform of body, but on the platform of spirit. That is what a wise man is. He sees everybody with equal vision. You know, in ophthalmology, this is a field in medicine. In Jai Shri Srinatha Gopinath Bhagavan Ki Jai. In this ophthalmology, There is a study of vision of a normal person. You know, people go to optometrist and check out, you know, what their vision of eye is. Somebody here, many of you are wearing spectacles. The vision here maybe is not clear. So you need an apparatus, you need an aid that will help us to see things in reality. So when people go to this optometrist, what they do is a person is meant to sit at a particular distance from the main object, and he is told to vision whether he can see that object. So the normal vision is counted as 6 by 6, and the poorest vision is counted as 6 by 60. Now I'll explain you what it means. So what does this 6 by 60 vision mean? 6 by 60 vision means that what a normal person can see from 60 meters, this person has to come to 6 meters to see what the object is. Are you getting? What I can see from 60 meters away, I can see this bulb, I can see Srila Prabhupada. A person with a poor vision has to go to as close as 6 meters to see what the reality is, what the object is in front of him. That is 6 by 60 vision. But person who is having 6 by 6 vision, that is considered as normal vision. Why? Because he is standing at a distance of 6 meter and he can see what exactly the things are. So there are different visions, 6 by 6, 6 by 9, 6 by 12, 6 by 24, 6 by 36, and the poorest is 6 by 60. So a person who is having 6 by 6 vision is considered as normal. So most of you here who don't have spectacles, you are expected to have a 6 by 6 vision. You can see, you know, me who is sitting here very clearly. So from material point of view, 6 by 6 vision is normal. But if we analyze closely, from spiritual point of view, even a 6 by 6 vision which is considered normal from material point of view, a 6 by 6 vision from the spiritual point of view is also a poor vision. Why? Because with this 6 by 6 vision, what are we seeing? We can see only the gross part. What about the deeper aspects? Can we see? Can we see the soul? Can we see the mind? Can we see the intelligence, the subtler aspects? Can we see the subtleness of all, the soul within? Absolutely not, with this 6 by 6 vision. So from spiritual point of view, even 6 by 6 vision, which is considered as normal, is the poorest vision. So we are actually, that's why people say, you know, we are spiritually blind. Because we just see the externals, can't go into the deeper aspects of life. So 6 by 6 vision is also faulty vision. But a person who has developed Divya Chakshu, or who has developed a vision through the knowledge of scriptures, he can actually go beyond the gross body. He can actually penetrate into the deeper regions of subtleties. And this is what this verse is speaking about, that a wise man can see everybody. What does he see? He does not see the body, external body of a cow or a dog or a dog eater. He sees the soul within everyone's body. That's why he is called Pandita Samadarshina. Now we are not on that platform because we are just seeing the gross and differentiating, you know, things on the gross level. But a wise man, his vision is very normal. He is actually living in the world of reality. Why? Because he can see the things as they are. We are actually living in the world, or we are actually living in a dreamland. You know, in a dream, a person is seeing something, but it's not real. Similarly, we, although in awakened state, we see something, but that's not actually what we are supposed to see. We are supposed to see the subtleness. That is the soul or the super soul within our body. So the question is, how has this wise man or a pandita, how could he develop such vision? How could he penetrate into the deeper aspects of life? The answer is given in the 17th verse. that was discussed very beautifully by Radha Jyoti Prabhu yesterday, where this verse explains the 17th verse says tad buddhya tadatmanam tad nishtha tad parayana gacchanti apunaravrutim jnana nirdut kalmasha. What does this mean? That a person who has dedicated himself completely with his mind, with his intelligence, with his entire existence, he has dedicated or he has taken shelter of the Supreme, that person, through knowledge, he gets purified and can see the things as they are. So this person who has taken complete refuge of the Supreme Lord, he has actually developed, he can actually develop this equal vision. In fact, when a person develops this equal vision, he sees only the spiritual soul or the spirit or the spark within the body. And what happens? The outer dress for that person, that is the body. Outer dress is the body. Outer dress for such a person is immaterial, secondary. So when a person, he sees everybody with the equal vision, where is the question of discrimination? People discriminate on the basis of color, on the basis of caste, on the basis of religion, on the basis of gender. But for such a person who is having an equal vision, there is no question of discrimination. As Prabhupada mentioned in the first line of this purport, Prabhupada says, a Krishna conscious person does not make any distinction between a species or any caste. Why? Because he is not simply seeing the external manifestation, that is the gross body, but he goes much deeper, a one step ahead. And actually, that is what is unity. That is what is spiritual unity. When you see everybody on the same platform, there is no question of discrimination. In fact, if a person can develop such vision, it can bring an end to all the problems that have arisen because of discrimination on the bodily platform. You know, people discriminate on the basis of color, on the basis of religion, on the basis of sex, on the basis of what not. No, whites are fighting with the blacks. You know, women are fighting for their liberation, women's liberation. They are fighting against man. Or Hindus are fighting with some other religion. No, Christians are fighting with some other religion. It's purely based on bodily concept of life. But when a person develops a deeper vision, there is no question of discrimination. This is something very interesting. In fact, there are so many flags, no, lined up together. When we go to UNO, what is UNO, you know? United Nations Organization. This organization is trying to bring about unity in the whole world. But it's not possible. Only they can bring the flags together. They cannot bring the heart of the people together. Why? Because everybody has a selfish, separate interest. It's not possible. But here is a classic example of a person who could bring the entire world under one banner. That is Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada could actually bring the whole world under one banner of ISKCON. That is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Just imagine. It's practically impossible. How is it possible, in fact? In fact, Prabhupada, when he went to West, myriad or a variety of people variety of people of different religion, different language, different color, or different, what do you say, dress code, different food habits, different bad habits they had, different bad conditionings they had, different mindsets, different perceptions. Everything differed. But this person, he could bring people from all over the world under one banner. In fact, it is like na bhuto na bhavishyati. It has never happened in the past, and it will never again happen apart from this ISKCON. What it will do in future, it has a power to bring people of different mindset, different religion, different language together. In fact, this is the unique contribution of Srila Prabhupada, a revolution that he has created in the history of mankind, never ever happened up till now. United Nations have failed, but ISKCON is that organization that could bring people together. How? Prabhupada personally was a person of such caliber. He was a Pandita Samadarshina. He could see the things as they are. And the knowledge which Prabhupada imparted was a true knowledge based on reality. That is the reason why Prabhupada could bring people under one banner. I just like to briefly speak about few examples, few pastimes which clearly illustrates how Prabhupada exemplified this verse, or Prabhupada personified this verse, Pandita Samadarshina. In fact, one of Prabhupada's disciples, Govinda Devi Dasi, this Mataji recalls one pastimes. One time in New Jersey, Prabhupada was sitting in a garden. And when Prabhupada was sitting, he was chanting his rounds, and this Mataji was sitting next to, very close to Prabhupada, observing Prabhupada chanting. And suddenly, Govinda Devi Mataji, she happened to look at a very ugly creature. And she called it a slug, S-L-U-G. I didn't know what slug is, so I happened to see into the dictionary what slug means. It explains that slug is a very low creature. It is just like a snail. You know, snail which walks very slow. But this creature does not have any shell, just like the snail has. So it's a very ugly creature which walks very slow, just like a snail. So as she saw, she immediately took herself back. She didn't like that. But as soon as she looked, as soon as she took herself back, Prabhupada looked at her, and Prabhupada immediately looked at that creature, a slug. And as soon as Prabhupada looked at that creature, Prabhupada leaned forward towards that creature. And Prabhupada called his disciple, this Govinda Devi Mataji, and Prabhupada, with love and compassion in his eyes, he spoke. He said to this Mataji, please chant for this poor creature. And Prabhupada went. And this Mataji, she kept on chanting until that creature just completely disappeared. And she writes in her realization that, Prabhupada, I could only see the superficial body or the ugly body of that slug. But Prabhupada, you went way beyond the coverings of the body and could see the soul and felt pain for that living entity who is suffering in that body. And she says that, Prabhupada, your entire mission was encapsulated in this verse, in this word which you said, please chant for this poor creature. Prabhupada wanted to elevate even this lowest creature to the highest level. This is equal vision. Not like people who simply want to crush, no, lower animals, who just want to slaughter, cut apart into pieces, see their blood flowing, and want to enjoy, no, their flesh. Prabhupada was very compassionate, even for a lower creature. In fact, Guru Gaurang Prabhu told me one more story. I'd like to narrate that also. Srila Prabhupada was in New Dwarka, that is Los Angeles, in 1973. And Shrutakirti Prabhu was his personal servant. And suddenly a bell rang and Prabhupada called his personal servant into his room. Shrutakirti Prabhu immediately ran into Prabhupada's room to find out what Prabhupada wants. And suddenly Prabhupada looked at Shrutakirti Prabhu's feet and said, "Do you see that bug?" And Shrutakirti Prabhu started looking here and there, but he could not see anything. Prabhupada repeated, "Can you see that bug?" And then finally, after a few moments, he could see a small, insignificant, tiny bug lying in one corner. Prabhupada said, "This bug is not moving since practically half an hour. It's lying in the same place. Maybe he's hungry. What you can do is you can get a maha flower garland or a flower that is offered to the deity. Place this bug on this flower and take him out in the window and place him on one of the leaves where he can get his nourishment." And Shrutakirti Prabhu was amazed. He said, "I could not even witness or notice this insignificant bug. And Prabhupada is noticing since half an hour." And he writes in his realization that Prabhupada did not feel it as a waste of time to elevate that lower creature. Did not discriminate. Wanted to give that same love of Krishna even to that smallest creature. This is Pandita Samadarshana. Prabhupada made hippies into happies who had no culture, who were lower than the Shudras. Prabhupada wanted to bring them from the level of Shudra to the level of Brahmana. Prabhupada said, "Why should they be bereft? They should also be elevated." This is Pandita Samadarshana. Not discriminating on the basis of caste or creed or sex or any species. Something not to be found in an ordinary person of this world. In fact, when Prabhupada, when he brought his American disciples to India, many of the Indians, the smart Brahmanas, they revolted, they objected. How can Americans who are mlechas be given diksha? It's not possible. Swamiji, you are doing everything wrong. But Prabhupada, he defended strongly by quoting verses from Shastras. Shastras say, "Aho bata swapacho gariyan, yat jivagre vartate namatubhyam." That a person who is born in a family of a Brahmana but does not chant the holy name of a Lord, he cannot be called as a Brahmana. But a person who is born in a family of a dog eater, Shruvapacho, if that person even chants the holy name of the Lord once, that person is immediately elevated to the position of a Brahmana. So how can you say that these people have no rights? In fact, Prabhupada quoted, "Kirata hunandra pulinda pulkasha abhira." What is that? Yavana kashadaya. And then finally it says, "Shudhyanti tashmei prabhavishnave namaha." All these people who are lower than the Shudras, even they can be purified if they once chant prabhavishnave namaha. They chant the names of Lord Vishnu. So how can they object? They also have full right to be uplifted. In fact, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, He took a person born in a Muslim family, born in a Mlecha family, and made him Namacharya. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made Haridas Thakur as Namacharya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu discussed the highest topic of mellows, divine mellows, with a person who is apparently Kayastha Brahmana, Ramananda Rai. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he even gave shelter to Subhuti Roy, who felt that he's been outcasted. Because at that time, caste system was so much prevalent. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to show simply this, that anybody and everybody can practice devotional service, irrespective of what their conditionings are, whichever position they are in. So this movement of Krishna consciousness is the liberal, most merciful movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is giving an equal opportunity for everybody to come on that level which is impossible for a lowest beings like us to achieve. This is the glory of Srila Prabhupada. Pandita Samadarshana. He never discriminated. He gave equal opportunity to everybody. And as far as the symptoms are concerned, the 1920 and the 21st verse speaks about the symptoms of a self-realized soul, a person who has developed equal vision. You know, just as there are shock absorbents, similarly all these great souls, they are duality absorbents. A person who has a shock absorbent means it is not affected by shock. Similarly, a duality absorbent means a person is not affected by any dualities of this world, which is the nature of a conditioned soul. A conditioned soul is affected by the heat and cold, fame and infamy, pleasant and unpleasant situations, winning success and failures, hankering and lamentation. But these great souls, as this verse explains, they are free from these dualities. That is one of the major prominent symptoms of these great souls. And Prabhupada, when he started his preaching mission, that he took a Herculean challenging task of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. And during his course of spreading this Krishna consciousness all over the world, he endured so many difficulties, so many dualities. But as I said, the great souls are shock absorbents. They are duality absorbents. They can easily resist duality. Prabhupada, in his course of preaching this Krishna consciousness, actually, he showed through his example how he was free from the dualities of this world. And a person who is free from the dualities is actually liberated. In fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes in his wonderful bhajan, Tomara sevaya dukkha hoye jato, sei to parama sukha. Seva sukha dukha parama sampada, nashaye avidya dukha. What does this mean? Tomara seva, my dear Lord, troubles that I encountered in your service shall be the cause of greatest happiness. Just imagine, how can a person be blissful or happy in the most troublesome situation? It's practically impossible. But a person, here Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, that my dear Lord, the troubles, the difficulties I endure in preaching your mission, that troubles are the greatest happiness of my life. Great moments. And he says that joy and sorrows, they are equally great riches, sukha sampada, parama sampada, and both of this destroy the misery of ignorance. This is the nature of self-realized soul. For them, whatever it takes in the service of the Lord, whether it is pain, whether it is pleasure, whether it is fame, or whether it is infamy, they don't mind undergoing it. Why? Because they are free. They have taken full shelter of the Lord. They know the impermanent and the impermanent nature of this world, the dual nature of this world. That's why they can actually transcend this bodily conception. Prabhupada imbibed the same verse of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and went out to preach boldly but with utter humility. I'll just speak one pastime of Srila Prabhupada, which Satsarudas Goswami Maharaj beautifully explains, which gives us a clear idea of how Prabhupada personified this verse, how Prabhupada personified this verse of Pandita Samadarshana, and he was actually free from the dualities. Na prahurushet priyam prapyam. This verse explains. Na dvijet prapya cha priyam. A person who neither rejoices upon achieving something pleasant nor laments upon obtaining something unpleasant. Who is self-intelligent, who is unbewildered in all circumstances, and who knows the science of God, is already situated in transcendence. Prabhupada, I'm just speaking from a certain section of Prabhupada's Lilamrita, where it is explained that Prabhupada is already now 80 years, and this is in January 1975. Prabhupada, at the age of 80, decided to go for a world tour, preaching tour, not for a roaming, not for enjoying, for preaching. And Satsarup Das Goswami explains that this was Prabhupada's eighth world tour in 10 years of his preaching since 1965. Prabhupada traveled 8 times all over the world within 10 years of his preaching. He further explains that this tour which he is going to now take over, he says that this tour would take him to 12 cities within 50 days, and he would enter seven major countries. That means he would be shifting from one country to another within this 50 days, and he would travel a distance of 34,000 miles. Can just imagine a person of the age of 80. I mean, we will find him either in the home resting or in the hospital lying in a bed. But here is a person who has already travelled 8 times all over the world since 1965, and now at the age of 80, he is deciding, okay, again I am going for a world tour. Not only that, this 50 days he would travel extensively, and when he would return back, this was in January 1975, and he would return within 60 days, that is 2 months. When he returns back in March, he immediately goes to Mayapur to attend the second international, gathering of his disciples. Every year during Gaur Purnima, his disciples would assemble from all over the world. So Prabhupada had to go there in March and attend that. And in April, and this was a major event, because for the first time thousands of disciples from all over the world had come to Mayapur. Why? Because just after Mayapur festival would get over in April, in March the festival gets over, in April there would be a temple opening of Sri Sri Krishna Balaram, Radha Shyam Sundar and Gaur Nitha in Sridham Vrindavan. So it was a great excitement amongst all the disciples. So this was a schedule. This was just a 3-month schedule, I am telling you. But Prabhupada's 13-year schedule from 1965 to 1977, every moment was just like this 3-month schedule. Jam-packed, hectic. It is way beyond our limited capacity to comprehend what Prabhupada underwent. What difficulties that person must have undergone at this age. where people are simply desiring to retire. At this age, at my age, I'm just 20, I'm what, 27, 28, but I'm now having backache sitting here. We can't even sit properly. What to speak of traveling at a jet speed all throughout the world. This is an acharya. Krishna Shakti Vinanahi Tara Pravartan. A great soul empowered by Lord Himself, Supreme Lord Himself, who can do wonders, who can create miracles all over the world. And not only that, his body was degenerating quickly at the age of 80 naturally. He had already so many diseases. But his enthusiasm was contagious. His enthusiasm was not degenerating. In fact, he was desiring to preach more and more and more even at that age. And that's what this verse of today speaks about, verse 21. Prabhupada speaks in this purport of verse 21 that but a person engaged in Krishna consciousness can work with greater vigor without sex pleasure, which people are hankering for. That is the only motivational force in this world. People are running here and there for what? For some selfless service? Absolutely not. Only revolving around this one thing, how can they enjoy their senses to the maximum? Prabhupada said, a devotee of the Lord has a powerful vigor, much powerful than a normal karmi person has. Why? Because he is working directly for the supreme cause. And then Prabhupada, when he was actually practically on the bed, he is telling his disciple, there was a London Rath Yatra which was to be held, and Prabhupada is telling his disciple, take me to London. He is in a position where he is not able to get up, but he is telling his disciple, his spirit, his enthusiasm was so much bubbling, contagious. And he is telling, take me to London, let me die on the battlefield, preaching Krishna consciousness, rather than lying here on the bed. This is the mood of a person who sees everything, who sees everybody in this world with equal vision. In fact, Srila Prabhupada alone was the ultimate judge of affairs for the entire ISKCON. His disciples were there, but they were new. Everything was new to them. He alone knew the best inner workings of ISKCON. And for every small purpose, like say to teaching the basic codes of conduct to the highest philosophy, Prabhupada had to work hard. Not only that, in fact Prabhupada was the only sole DBT author and the publishing director. At that time, he was the only one who was publishing and writing books. Right from morning, attending morning programs, giving Srimad Bhagavatam, morning programs and going for a morning walk, then taking darshan of the lordships and giving Srimad Bhagavatam class and attending press conferences. Meeting with many well-wishers, most of the time agnostics. Above all, in the night, he would not sleep. He would sleep only from 10 to 12 or 9 to 12. And 12, he would get up. What he would do? He would write commentaries, translations on this jam literature, Srimad Bhagavatam. He never wasted a single moment. Why? For him? It was absolutely not for him. It was for us. Had it not been for Srila Prabhupada, this temple would have not existed today. They would have not been sitting here. One man who was completely 24 hour in touch with Krishna, Krishnaized. This person, he could bring the whole world under one banner. This is Srila Prabhupada. Not only that, while he was traveling, he had to ride wherever he would reach. In spite of his jet lag, in spite of his late delays in the flight, disruptive traveling hours, and inconveniences, waiting at the airport, custom delays, he would not waver, his determination would not waver in writing Srimad Bhagavatam commentaries. Something surprising. How can a person, resist jet lag? Jet lag is something, if you can't, your cycle goes completely upside down. For a person who has traveled in flights, if we can't sleep for a few hours, our mind goes crazy. And here is a person who is practically at the tip of his toe, traveling, speaking, preaching, without caring for his own health. And above all of this, he has to inspire. That is the toughest thing. He has to inspire, and he has to strengthen all the disciples all over the world and protect them from Maya's invasion, which was coming moment after moment. To inspire somebody, that's the toughest part. To keep somebody going for a long run, it's the toughest, challenging part. Prabhupada could do that. Prabhupada's presence made everything change. When a disciple would hear Prabhupada is coming, they would be ready to do everything and anything for Prabhupada. That was the enthusiasm which Prabhupada infused, impregnated, injected in all of his disciples. A person who is in touch with the Supreme Lord at all times. And so many difficulties came. When Prabhupada, I was telling that Prabhupada is supposed to, Prabhupada, when he took this this tour in 1975, he was supposed to travel 12 major cities. Which were the 12 cities? He first flew from Bombay to Hong Kong, Hong Kong to Tokyo, Tokyo to Hawaii, Hawaii to Los Angeles, Los Angeles to Mexico, Mexico to Caracas, Caracas to Miami, Miami to Atlanta, Atlanta to Dallas, Dallas to New York, New York to London, London to Tehran, and finally back to India, Calcutta, and went from there, he went to Mayapur. And when he was in Tokyo or Japan, he received very unpleasant news. Devotees were writing news letters from all over the world. Now he received a news that from Germany, in Germany temple, the police had raided the temple, and they had seized all the bank accounts. Then there was mass propaganda against Krishna consciousness movement by the other religionists. Things were not always pleasant, most of the time unpleasant. But he endured. He was not affected by the pleasant and the unpleasant moment. Why? Surrendered completely. Tad buddhi saratma tad, what is that? Tad buddhya sadatmana tad nishtha tad parayana. Completely taken shelter. And in London, police had stopped Rath Yatra. Prabhupada is writing letters, revive Rath Yatra again. In Germany, Prabhupada is writing letter, rescue all the funds back. And in Paris, Prabhupada is telling that because devotees require a large place, we are running short of the place, so please acquire a larger property. Prabhupada was a multitasker. He could deal with 100 things simultaneously, but never forgot never became illusioned. This is a classic person. We need an example. We need an ideal or role model to whom we can follow. Here is a classic person whom we can follow, dedicate our life to. If we can just do some service with whatever capacity we have at our disposal, Krishna will look at us. He will consider even lowly person like us. Otherwise, we have no hope, no other alternative. Not only that, I'll just end my class with this final this verse 21st explains that such a liberated person is not attracted to material sense pleasure, but is always in trance, happy, even in the most difficult situation, experiencing the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized person enjoys unlimited happiness, for he concentrates on the Supreme. This is the vision of the great souls. Because they are experiencing, or they are drowning moment after moment in the bliss, by being in touch with the Supreme Lord, who is Nikhila Paramananda Purnamritabdha, whose very existence is nothing but bliss. Because the great souls are in touch with the Supreme Lord, they are always in bliss. And their vision is to bring that same spiritual world down into this material world. Prabhupada said, this ISKCON temples are none other than Vaikunthas, where there is no anxiety. Prabhupada brought all the dhams, all the holy places to the Western world. Prabhupada named West Virginia as New Vrindavan. Prabhupada named San Francisco as New Jagannath Puri. Prabhupada named Hungary as New Brajdhan. Prabhupada named Los Angeles as New Dwarka. He actually brought the spiritual world into this material world. A person who is constantly enjoying the bliss within can create this transformation, can bring the spiritual world right down here and give us that vision. This is the glory of this, of a great Acharya, founder Acharya. So, so in conclusion, we have to learn to develop this vision. How do we develop this vision? By serving such great souls who have such great visions. Krishna se tomar Krishna dite par tomara shakati ache. Ami to kangala Krishna Krishna boli dhaitava pache pache. That great souls, they have Krishna within their heart. They have Lord within their heart. And they have the capacity to give us that bliss. By serving them, we can actually, you know, develop this same vision and be happy in this world of duality. There are many things to speak, but time is up. And I have spoken many things which are way beyond my realizations. Thank you for your patience hearing. And please forgive me if I have spoken anything wrong. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.